Welcome to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program of George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. For the past two centuries, America's perception of China has ranged from rapture to disdain. Shortly after President Nixon announced his historic visit to China in 1972, Americans developed an infatuation of sorts with the Chinese people, one that developed along with the Cultural Revolution. For some, the love affair has soured, as China is seen, warts and all, in the midst of change. I'm Penny Goodman, and today on Frankly Speaking, we're going to talk about U.S.-China relations with Dr. David Kubrick, professor of English at George Mason University, and Dr. Franz Pruitt, director of international studies and programs. Dr. Kubrick recently completed a year in Beijing as a Fulbright lecturer. The decade of the Cultural Revolution, spearheaded by Chairman Mao, has come to an end, and in its place is the Liberation Government of China. What philosophical differences of this new leadership, Dr. Kubrick, will affect U.S.-China relations?
Well, the present leadership is much more pragmatic, more willing to subordinate ideological principles to economic objectives. As a consequence, it's more open to the West, to capitalist countries and to the United States in particular. So the present government wants to establish relations with the United States in three areas: cultural exchange, diplomatic and political relations, and economic relations. They want U.S. technology and expertise.
Well, let's address the issue of trade and economy. After years of self-reliance and a closed economy, China has opened its doors, albeit cautiously, to foreign investment. One example is the development of four economic centers designated for manufacturing and export. How is the U.S. going to be involved with those centers, if at all?
Well, I think what the U.S. wants from China, to speak in very general terms, is there's an interest in China's resources. China is believed to be a very rich country in natural resources. There's also an interest in the Chinese workforce as a source of labor. For instance, American Motors has just signed a contract to develop a plant in China where they'll build their Jeeps that they'll distribute then throughout Asia. On the other hand, China wants, as I mentioned, U.S. technology, expertise. They're also interested in U.S. as a market for their light industry, for instance, their textiles.
Dr. Pruitt, do you have any, how do you think the Chinese people might be affected by Western culture?
That's difficult to predict, but I think we have seen that Western culture has invaded a large number of countries in the world. And I'm sure that the Chinese people are going to be very cautious in ways to prevent too much westernization.
I think that we've already seen blue jeans and Pepsi Cola in China, but not as pervasively as perhaps some other countries. I think the Chinese are not as enthusiastic about our culture as they are our trade and technology. I read recently where they're in these new economic centers, they are in fact putting up fences and relying on political education to prevent some of the impact of that of our lifestyle. How successful do you think these techniques will be in protecting the Chinese people?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. The situation is very fluid. Most cultures, less developed countries, have been undermined or at least seriously distorted by the process of modernization, the impact of Western culture. China has several advantages in that respect. One, it's a very authoritarian, perhaps totalitarian regime, and so it can control the people in ways that a less highly organized and less authoritarian country would be able to. Also, China has a very strong education program, political education, and so they have more control over the minds of their youth in that respect than other countries. And China can learn from and perhaps profit from the examples and troubles of other countries. However, they want to take what they want from the West and not get other things, including other problems. I'm not so certain that that's as easily done as they may think.
When you were recently in China, did you see much effect of Western culture?
Already, I think that people of China, especially the women, are beginning to dress more like Westerners. They're certainly interested, like it seems every country is, in American popular culture. So they love American films, American music. Recently, they've signed a contract with one of the national broadcasting systems here to get several American TV programs. And I think that those will have impacts, influence, change their culture in ways that are very hard to predict and control.
Dr. Pruitt, when we have Chinese students come here to the U.S., how do they respond to our pop culture?
Well, usually they like it very much and get very involved in it. I think we shouldn't forget that a lot of Americans have heritage coming from the Chinese, and many of those people, those students who come, are visiting their families or their relatives. And so they are gradually being introduced to the American culture. Very few of our students are yet living in the dormitories where they'll be immersed immediately.
If China is successful in mobilizing its vast resources, some fear it could change the balance of power as we know it today. Could China ever become a military superpower?
What I could say is what's reported in the popular press, which is that China right now is in the process of modernizing their military, but at the same time reducing their military budget. And I think that China thinks that presently there's a stalemate between the two existing superpowers. It's a time for them to develop their heavy industry, but in non-military ways. China's war is with its population and its efforts to modernize. And so I don't think that any time in the next several decades would it be appropriate to think of China as a military superpower.
Well, thank you. For more information on U.S.-China relations, join Dr. Kubrick at a panel discussion open to the public on Monday, October 24th, for United Nations Day at George Mason University. Dr. Pruitt, tell us a little bit about the activities for that day.
Yes, I'd be very happy to. For the third year, George Mason University will be presenting United Nations activities, which is in concert with everywhere around the world where that day is being celebrated. We will be offering five different panels starting at 8:30. The first one will be on Saudi Arabia and Jordan, Kingdom at the Crossroad. At 10:30, we'll have the China panel, as mentioned earlier. At 1:30, we'll have the International Debt Crisis, Borrowers, Banks, and IMF. At 3, we will have Nicaragua and Costa Rica, different approaches in Latin America. And at 7:30, we'll have U.S. security, world peace, allies, arms, and diplomacy. Each one of these panels will have a pro and a con presentation, and the community is very welcome to attend
and
these events.
Free?
They are completely free. And good. They'll be held in the Student Union, too. And parking places are available.
Okay. There are other activities taking place during that week, I know. What are some of those?
Yes, we're hoping to have this week called International Awareness Week. And on Wednesday of that week, we will have a study abroad fair where there'll be opportunities for students and others to come and see what other programs are being offered around the country to go and study abroad for 6 months, a year, or even a shorter time.
And they can get credit? Is this
yes,
the programs
they
can
will
credit?
Have to plan ahead, but they will be able to receive credits. Also on the 28th, we will have a celebration of World Hunger Day, and we'll have a speaker from AID coming and talking about that.
Now, I think Dr. Kubrick is going to be speaking again, not this month, but next.
That's right. The Office of International Programs and Services, in its effort to internationalize the university and helping the community to see more about the world affairs, will be putting on a ethnic dinner at the Sichuan restaurant here just in Fairfax, and Dr. Kubrick and his wife will be talking about China and will be showing slides. If anybody is interested, they can call our office at 323-2001.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
In addition to those activities, George Mason is in its third week of the Arts Explosion. Here's this week's events.
From Sunday, October 23rd to Saturday, October 29th, there will be a silent auction from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Student Union 2. On Monday, October 24th, see the third Canadian film that starts at 8 p.m. in Lecture Hall 1. On Tuesday, October 25th, see the film Christo, 10 Works in Progress at 8 p.m. in Lecture Hall 1. On Wednesday, October 26, a concert featuring Carolyn Dill soprano and Lee Sumner on piano. That concert begins at 8 p.m. in the Harris Theater. On Thursday, October 27, meet the GMU authors in a special book signing session at noon in the Fenwick Library. That same evening, artist Jane Haskell will speak on neon art. That starts at 8 p.m. in Lecture Hall 1. On Friday, October 28, see the popular bluegrass group Seldom Seen at 8 p.m. in the Harris Theater. And on Sunday, October 30th, meet writer Mary Lee Settle at 8 p.m. in the Student Union 2. For more information on the GMU Arts Explosion, call 323-ARTS. That's 323-ARTS.
I'm Penny Goodman, and my guests today have been Dr. David Kubrick, Professor of English at George Mason University, and Dr. Franz Pruitt, Director of International Studies and Programs. Our technical director is Donna Ambrosiano. Join us next week when we'll discuss art and culture in Canada. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program of George Mason University, the State University of Northern Virginia.